Welcome to All Over the Map. Take chances and ask questions.
Open discussion on all topics. The driving force. Get her done. Laughter is medicine for the soul. It's a small world after all.
Big hard shot, and they build. They score. Rob Trent.
Shrimp, very creative. There he goes. He's got the scoop, drops it, and finishes it off.
Robbie Shrimp, tipsy doodle. Look at all this. He scores. Oh my goodness. That's the move of the week.
Rob was one of the key components that won the Memorial Cup with the famous London Knights team in 2005 that held the likes of players such as David Boland and Corey Perry. Robbie Shrimp was drafted in the first round, 25th overall, by the Edmonton Oilers of the NHL. While playing in the National Hockey League, Rob played for the Edmonton Oilers, the New York Islanders, and Atlanta Thrashers before moving his career overseas where he had mad success. Just to list off a few of his many awards and accolades, in 2002, he won the Jack Ferguson Award. In 2003, he also was on the All-Rookie Team. In 2004, he played in the CHL Top Prospects game. In 2005, he won the Memorial Cup with the London Knights. In 2006, he won the Eddie Powers Memorial Trophy. In the 2005-06 season with the London Knights, Rob scored a whopping 57 goals in 57 games with 145 points to boot, leading the OHL in scoring. Also in 2006, he played on the CHL First All-Star Team. While playing in the American Hockey League, he played in two All-Star games in 2008 and 2016, respectively. Life after hockey has been an adventure for Robbie Shrimp. He is now a businessman, entrepreneur, with a mind that is magnetized by positivity and focused thought. But Rob is a family man first, that puts his family number one before anything in this life. Robbie.
What's up, buddy?
How you doing, brother?
Good, how are you?
Pretty good, thanks. Just been running around and getting a few things figured out. And yeah, pretty much, we can get right into it if you want.
Beauty.
Yeah. So what is it, like 10 p.m. there?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we might as well fire off with the first question here. So I think it's really important to for the listeners to get your perspective on, like, what's the first thing you think of before wrestling an alligator?
Don't get bit.
Don't get bit. Good answer. And I wanted to know the first thing that you thought when NHL.com called you the Jumbo Shrimp.
Yeah. I got that when I was like 14 on a USA magazine that they came out with that. So I heard that before and I've been chirped a lot because of it. So it wasn't too shocking.
Yeah. Like, did they make you any special shirts with a shrimp on it or anything like that? Was that like a special thing?
I didn't want it to be a thing. That's for sure.
Well, apparently it was, but it's not anymore.
Yeah.
So anyways, but in all seriousness, let's get down to, I think it's really important to give the listeners your perspective on, you know, what it was like where you grew up and all the hard work and adversity that it took to reach your dream. And, you know, obviously that was playing in the National Hockey League and all the people that helped you along the way with your journey.
Yeah, it's definitely a, you know, long, hard, grinding journey to get to that end destination. But it was something that was, always had passion for. So it was something, it was fun along the way. It was challenging along the way. My family was so supportive through the whole thing, and a lot of people were supportive all the way through it. But the big thing that also helped me chase my dream was a local guy that done the same thing, Tim Conley, kind of right before me, kind of blazed the trail and made it a lot more realistic in my eyes to do it. I wasn't coming from where I did, you know, Fulton, New York, small town. So that would have been, it was a bit of a pipe dream in the beginning. But then again, having it be someone else doing it right before me and helped me kind of stay focused and realize that it was possible. There was a lot of people along the way that did you know, kind of give you that, like, you think you're going to make it, like, you're crazy kind of speech. Doubting.
Yeah, the believers and the non-believers, right?
Yeah, that was always fuel for my engine. I always was kind of driven to prove people wrong. And that just helped. That really did help along the way. As much, sometimes negativity can be, for some people, sometimes, even certain instances for myself, it does weigh you down. But a lot of, when I was younger, first starting these steps towards making it to the NHL, it was that negativity was fuel for me. It pissed me off.
Yeah.
And it made me want to, you know, prove them wrong.
Yeah. It's kind of transmuting that, the negativity and propelling that, you forward and, realizing that dream must've been awesome. So, I wanted to ask you a question, like, how nervous were you before your first NHL game? And about all the humanism that is behind professional sports.
First game was definitely nerve-wracking. First NHL game was like very late in the season call up, so it was somewhere where I hadn't been around that team, so to speak. And that first game playing at that level, it was nerve-wracking and uncomfortable, really. That's the emotions I can, if I think back to it, was really uncomfortable, and just trying to get my head in the space to go out and play and see what was going to happen. It was literally like the 81st or 80th game of the season in NHL when I got called up, so it was really deep in the season. It was weird, but Nothing goes as planned, as I've learned in this journey.
Absolutely. Yeah. I guess they say, if you're, they say if your goal doesn't scare you, then it's not big enough.
Yeah.
So, did you ever puke during a game?
No, I never had that issue. I never got that nervous or that. I played with a couple guys that pulled the trigger as far as puking on themselves every game, but go in the bathroom and let it rip. And it was a bizarre, ritual, so to speak, but hey, whatever.
Purging before a game.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I heard a rumor actually that, if hockey wasn't your chosen calling, that you had aspirations maybe to be a pig farmer.
That's right. We used to have, my parents had, we had pigs that we kept out on a friend's farm, and we used to go out there all the time, screw around the mud, feed the pigs, and I loved it. My pig boots, really enjoyed that. So that's as far back as I can go. I had these Transformer boots, my pig boots. I was obsessed with them, dude. So pig, yeah.
Yeah, dude. And that's what I love about you is your humility, man. It's like, if one thing doesn't work, you just, you keep moving forward and you get creative and, coming from such a creative guy with a mind that I think is, absolutely on a higher plane of existence. I really think that and appreciate our friendship too at the same time. It's, screams integrity. And, that's something that I'm really proud of you for.
Appreciate that.
What was the most heartbreaking game that you ever lost, and how did you recover after that loss?
I would have probably say,
or is there just too many to name?
Yeah, some big games. Game 7 in the Western Conference Finals against Guelph and Junior was a breaker. And that was actually fuel for the fire for the next season in London, where we went on to break a lot of records and have an amazing season, win a Memorial Cup. We lost that game 7 to Guelph at home, and it was crazy. It was shocking, almost disappointing, all that stuff. Your draft year, so it was, kind of wanted to put up a championship season going into my draft. A lot of the reasons why it was disappointing, but it was fuel again the next year. I know I took it personal, and a lot of other guys in that team that came back the next year took it personal. And we came out the next year with not only just being pissed off, but also having learned
the burning desire,
learned our lesson too of it doesn't just happen. Just because you're a really good team, you got really good names on the paper, it doesn't just happen. So it's, it taught us a lesson about closing, you know, closing the deal.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot like life, eh? You're only as good as your last shift.
That's right.
Yeah, I know our audience would love to hear from a champion like yourself on what it takes to have a winner's mindset.
Yeah, I think it's a short memory and understanding, you know, being prepared as far as the details. Small details add up, right? And it's cliche if you want to, you know, everyone says it, but it's so true. The small details really add up to the big picture. And it's not always hitting home runs out of the park. It's, you know, if we talk about hockey terms, it's literally the small things of getting the puck out of the zone. If you're a winger, the smallest battles, and they wind up adding up at the end. You know, and having small details prepared and I don't know about being prepared, but practicing on them, that's the preparation part. Understanding the small details, practicing the small details, perfecting them, and then executing when it comes time, when the big dance comes, not being afraid to execute because you are prepared.
Yeah. Moving through the fear into the uncomfortability that kind of gets you comfortable, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, let's talk about draft day. How did it feel on your draft day in 2004 when you were drafted 25th overall by the Edmonton Oilers? If I'm not mistaken, you were actually rated much higher.
Yeah, I was ranked top 10 in the NHL draft, and it just had
– yeah.
Well, it was just a controversial draft season. You know, I got demanded a trade out of Mississauga, and actually in those playoffs I got benched. So there was a lot of negativity going into it. It was a really tough time, tough year. A lot of stuff.
I mean, that was hell of a draft class. I mean, Sidney Crosby went first overall.
Oh, no, correct? I was the year before with Ovechkin. Ovechkin, Malkin.
Well, he's not a bad player.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
He was good.
He can score a goal or two.
He was sick.
Just like you.
Right.
Best player of all time in your mind?
Of all time.
Bobby Orr, Lemieux, Gretzky, Yzerman. Who do you think, from your standpoint, who's the best player of all time?
I'd have to say that's such a tough question. It really
so
is.
Many, eh?
From my memory, being watching the game, you know, you can always go to everyone else's answer. Oh, you got to see Bob. I didn't get to see Bobby Orr, so I can't speak. You know, I'd have to be regurgitated. From my eyes, when I watched the game, it's hard not to say Sidney Crosby in this era, watching how good he is and getting to see the 90s era.
Yeah.
Jeez, man, I'm trying to go through my mind and really pick it apart. But I love Joe Sakic and Peter Forsberg. This top Joe Sakic was such a good player. But if we're thinking about like today, and I seen today's game and I saw the 90s game. So Sidney Crosby is such a good hockey player. I get to play against him too, so that factors in, obviously. He's so good at hockey, like so good at hockey. And it's a different game today. And the goalies are much bigger, players are much faster, stronger, and he's still so good at it. So,
yeah,
in my mind, in the way he skates and the way he plays a game, sees a game, it's hard not for me to pick. Because, again, I didn't really get to grow up watching Lemieux. I got when he came back in the 90s, yeah, but, I mean, he's battling. His big years were kind of like late 80s, early 90s. I was 5 years old.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he only had 199 points in, like, I think it was 72 games. He was on track to beat Gretzky's record of 215 that year. And I remember I had a paper route, and my paper route was always late because I was checking the stats. Lemieux was my favorite player at the time, and I was always seven point night, 5 point night, and through that whole time he's battling, you know, back issues and having people to tie up his skates. And you know, I met Mario in person. You know, he was my idol growing up, Gretzky and Lemieux. And I mean, what a humble guy. He was doing a lot of work for Fair Play at the time. And, you know, when he walked into the room, it was just, you know, you could feel his aura, his confidence. And, you know, I think, you know, even a better person than hockey player, you know, and rebuilding that franchise too, you know, Pittsburgh, not only has he won two championships as a player, but, you know, three championships as an owner is pretty commendable.
Yeah. He's unbelievable.
So who is your favorite coach of all time, my friend? I know you've had a few.
Yeah, that's tough. It's tough to pick. I would have to, Steve Ludzik had a big impact on me and was really, it's hard to say. Steve comes to mind right away. Ludzik was amazing, did a lot for me, taught me a lot. It's hard to pick between him and Don Kernan, because Don Kernan was the guy that if I, didn't meet him, I would have never met Steve. So between those two, Don Kernan really helped me. Him and his son, Donnie Kernan Jr., really gave me a lot of information about hockey and taught me a ton and gave me a huge opportunity with the rink in my hometown to be on the ice as much as I wanted and be a rink rat. And, that was the big opportunity for me. So it's really tough. But Steve was, Ludzik was amazing. Taught me a lot. I thought a lot of him. I looked up to him a ton. He was like a second dad to me. And I wish we would have had more time together. Really, the first year we played for him was awesome. And then they sold the team, changed management, changed everything. And that's when it didn't fit well for us with the new management. So we demanded a trade out of Mississauga and Ludzik. Sometimes I do wonder about that. If that didn't happen, if we would have had, two or three, even four seasons with Ludzik, what would have been a different outcome, I think.
It's funny, eh? How everything just, I guess everything happens for a reason and leads us to where we are now. And hockey, obviously hockey is a very high impact game. What's your opinion on cheap shots and dirty plays coming from such a skilled hockey player such as yourself?
I always was given the comfort of a tough guy, to be honest with you, because I played tier two junior at 14 years old. I was playing against 20-year-olds, and there were some goons, and there were some, shitheads, and guys that would definitely look to. There was times I was coming down on it happened before. I come down on a one-on-one, and the D, instead of like trying to poke check the puck, just tomahawk and broke his stick over me. And I'm not crying about it. I kind of thrived on it. Again, used the negativity for that. But once that happened, we realized I needed someone to protect, and that protection gave me freedom to be the player that I could be. In 14, yeah. I wound up being on the top, I think it was top five in scoring. And then the next year at 15, I was the lead scorer in the league, but I had that freedom because of that. I didn't have to worry about getting beat up or it wasn't about getting beat up. It was more about getting hurt. Like a baseball swing over the arm, you break bones. Like, there's another thing to stand into. If you get into a fight, drop the gloves, like that's a square off, but it's a different story with cheap shots. Like guys going at your knees and stuff like that. That's like, it's no part of the game at all. And so that gave me, Brian Basner was my tough guy in junior. And then when I played Mississauga, Wes Rippon. Then in London, there's Brandon Prost, Danny Bois, Kelly Thompson. So there was always that, what's the right word? But these guys were like sheriffs, so to speak, As soon as the cheap shot artist or the bad guys would start riling up a little bit, you had these guys answer the bell and it settled everything down.
Yeah, a lot of that has dissipated from the game now, wouldn't you think?
Definitely.
It's such a skilled game now. I mean, it's so fast out there. It's unbelievable. I wanted your perspective on, we talked a little bit before on the phone, about a week and a half ago, about women's hockey and how it's making a real resurgence right now. There's so many, women's hockey players that are unbelievably talented and skilled. And I'd love to hear your opinion on that, because I think a lot of those women deserve a little more credibility than they deserve.
Yeah, no, the women are so passionate, and they have such a hard work ethic and amazing work ethic. And for me, I got a chance to see that at a young age. And then again, in my pro career, I skated with Don Kernan. He coached a women's team as well. Like the girls team, I should say, in my hometown. I guess used to skate every Tuesday and Thursday with those girls. He took them to a national championship. So I saw them, how the girls prepared, how they practiced, how they saw the game. And it was different than the boys. Well, 100%. There's no doubt about it. The boys were, it's just, there's men and female. They're totally different in some aspects. But then again, when I played pro, I used to go to train in London, Ontario with Kari Schneider and her husband. And we trained with David Bull, and I trained with Rebecca Johnson and Bailey Brum. And watching those girls, how they busted their ass and what they were working towards and their dedication, really, it gave me another little insight and reminder of the women And, you know, with another company that I was working with and involved with, the sponsorship of the NWHL also gave me some more insight to women's hockey and how I started the lane of a business with online coaching, and I immediately thought of the women. Because I thought,
yeah,
having these girls and knowing their passion and their dedication and their work ethic and their knowledge and to your point, their skill and ability, how can we circle that back in a game, into their game? I thought it was super important, and it was also a way to open a lane for them to kind of make a living out of this, and rightfully so. They are experts at this game as well, and I think it needs I wanted to help highlight that and bring them to, you know, kind of bring them opportunity.
Absolutely. That's awesome, man. Well, let's, let's talk about your career overseas, my man. You know, it's no secret that you had a lot of success over there. And I'd like to hear about your new home over in Latvia, where you're staying now with your wife and your kid. You know, elaborate maybe a little on family values and, yeah, just what it's like over there.
Yeah, Europe's a totally different game, you know, totally different world, really. Obviously, it's big hurdles, obviously, language barrier. And now when they used to come, Europeans used to come over to our side, is, you know, I kind of feel for them. I'm in their shoes. You know, they come in the locker room, it's English only, and sometimes in London, we had a couple of Russians, you know, the Swedes come over or whatever it might be. And now I get to experience that barrier, but it's great. It's got its own, you know, culture is so different. It's,
love it over there.
Yeah, I think it's just much slower and much more calculated in the sense of, you know, letting things marinate, letting things go through the process. It's not a rush. You know, things are kind of taken slowly here and built out with time. So that's something I've learned about the culture here and kind of enjoy it. And I could use it helps me a lot because I'm fast, go, go, go. And sometimes I need that, you know, break, so to speak, and realize that things can get done. They don't have to go 100 miles an hour to get done.
100%. And it's kind of cool. You get it, you know, you go over there and you learn a lot about the culture. And, you know, it's obviously, you know, I think we're all descendants, obviously, from Europe. And, you know, just the architecture and the beatitude over there. It's, you know, I've traveled extensively all through Europe. And, it's a different dealio over there than it is over here in North America. I don't think any of us have completely got everything figured out in life, but, you know, there's been a lot more going on over there since, the beginning of time, so to speak, in North America. So you must be feeling pretty good being over there.
Yeah, it's great here. You know, I really do enjoy it. It's much different, whole different scene. And in this time of the world where we're in right now, it's actually Latvia is one of the safest places to be with the COVID stuff. So it is by numbers, you know, the cases are way down, and my wife's happy. So, you know, the expression is very true. Happy wife, happy life. She's much more supportive with her family here. Our daughter's going to school. So it's good to get those roots going. You know, we haven't really had them. Yeah. I haven't had roots since I was, you know, 15 years old and moved away from home. So it's now 34, starting to get them. Probably not exactly, again, nothing goes as planned. I never would have whipped up the scenario where being grown my roots into Europe, not playing hockey. You know what I mean? So that things always change, and it's about being flexible, but I really do start to enjoy the culture. It's no matter of learning the language. And then I can really, cause really on a day to day, I don't know what people are talking about. I don't have a clue. Not a clue.
try learning three new words a day. And then within a year, you'll know the whole language.
Yeah. No, I like it.
And then you can teach
small goals.
Yeah. Awesome, man. If you don't mind, let's talk mental health. You know, we've talked personally about this topic, and, how has it affected your family?
Yeah, you know, I've had my struggles and had my, you know, my stuff to deal with. So mental health has been a battle in my family. So it's something learning how to deal with and learning how to manage, so to speak, and live with was a bit of a tough time. But I feel taking steps towards living a better life and being happier with life and understanding the bad days, not putting too much pressure on them, is something where I've grown a lot as a person, and, you know, not when I have those bad days, not chasing them with dumb decisions and doing stupid shit to make it worse. You know, understanding it, you know, a bad day can happen. You can have a bad day. It's okay. Like, tomorrow's a new day.
Yeah, man.
It's important.
I think, you know, the stigma is being lifted. You know, it's, you know, with people like yourself and, you know, many other people, a lot of the people in the athletic world, you know, they're being very outspoken about their own personal adventures through the mental health journey. You know, and these times are, you know, they're not the easiest times of all, but, you know, using the creative faculties of our imagination, you know, anything is possible, really. You know, it's, I believe that. And sometimes you just got to push through it. And even the smallest things of just getting up and taking a shower, you know, just those little things add up to, you know, building resilience and mental strength.
Yeah, for sure. Small victories, not setting the, you set the bar too high and you're going to set yourself up for failure. So totally. Whatever it is that, and in small victories, they're all that matter. Not all that matter, but I think it's really important step by step and whatever that is. And then if it's for, you know, the other thing is when you talk about stigma. So if your bar or your victory is getting up, taking a shower, me as another human being should be like, well, no judgment towards that, then I'm happy for you. If that's what, you know what I mean? I think that's important too. Understanding, you know, being supportive for people who are struggling with mental health. Again, if it's getting up for a person taking a shower, then as another human being supportive to that, and then saying you got to cheer them on, but, you know, be supportive of people's steps and building momentum. You understand what I'm trying to say?
100%. Yeah. I think a lot of it is, you know, what society has bestowed upon us, you know, all these labels and misdiagnoses and whatnot. I know I was misdiagnosed with bipolar, and later I found out it was complex post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, which led to anxiety, which led to, you know, substance abuse and whatnot. And, you know, getting over that was, you know, there's a bit of a challenge that, you know, the substance abuse just kind of came with the territory, you know, leaving home at a young age and just trying to fit in, just wanting to be loved. You know, and then as you get older, you look back and you're like, holy shit. And, you know, what a journey. But, you know, I think it's our responsibility to, you know, educate people that it's okay not to be okay.
Yeah, it'll pass.
Because you are okay. You are okay, and it will pass. And as much as it hurts sometimes, you know, having a good solid support network is of utmost paramount.
Yeah, no, definitely. But people that are understanding and supportive, just really support.
And I appreciate you being open about that too. You know, there's not a lot of people who can actually talk about it openly. And that's much appreciated to not just me, but the listeners, obviously, as well. So, yeah, what advice do you have for all the young guns coming up through the ranks? You know, there's nothing like hockey IQ, and that's something that you're known for big time.
Yeah, I think studying your game is really important. I think it always has been, in my opinion, but it's becoming more prominent now, especially with how fast technology is. You see the guys on the bench using iPads and that kind of thing, going over stuff. I think it's really important to study your game, to practice with a purpose, studying your film, studying your game, and really a lot of imagery work. I think it's really important. What helped me be successful, imagining these scenarios before they happen, studying the situations, being prepared, because it comes now it can come quicker than it used to. The game's so much different now. It's you know, it used to be buy your time, and you can hopefully get in there by 24 or 25. I mean, now the reality is you can pop in there at 19, 20. So when you're younger, I guess you could say, like teenage boy, 15, 16, starting to get these good routines and good habits of studying and preparing and visualizing your success and imagery work. When you get in those scenarios, you're ready, you're prepared. And I think that's a big part of it now. What is preparation now? Preparation's changed. It used to be just go squat the freaking gym and bench press the bar and be, you know, ripped and big jack guy for training camp. I think now it's more about studying the game, because it's not so much of that really big, tough physical game. It's more skilled. It's faster. it's more calculated, and it's happening very fast. So you have to be able to process very fast. And if you don't understand the information, then you can't, it takes you time to process. So studying these scenarios and studying what you want to, you can watch with the resources now, you can see the people that have already done it before you and use that for your information to study those scenarios. So when you get into it, you understand it well. It doesn't take you 7, 8, 9, 10 tries. Sometimes when you get to that top level, you don't get 7, 8, 9, 10 tries. You don't. I mean, it's really that it comes down to it. You get into training camp or you get in a preseason game, you got to be ready to execute, or someone else that's on the bubble that you're fighting with does execute and you're out. You're going down to the minors, or not to put that much pressure on it, but that's how close everybody is once you get to the top. Once you get to that bottleneck, everybody's pretty close to each other. So what you do differently than the next guy is really what keeps you there or gives you that opportunity.
For sure. The power of focused thought, right? You know, it's what you think about, you bring about. What you focus on expands. And it seems like you've done a pretty good job at that. So, I want our listeners to actually really know about your baby, Vision 44, and who's involved. And I know you've been working your ass off at this, and this is your passion now. Being able to give back to that, you know, to the game that you love. Tell me a little bit about that. I know one of my good buddies, Glenn, is Glenn Metropolit. He'll end up being on the show eventually as well. We had a good talk yesterday. Wonderful guy. So who's involved with all this? And give our listeners a bit of perspective on what's going on with that. Because I think that's going to have a huge impact on the hockey world.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, no, I'm really excited about it. It's so... Her platform is 44 Vision Hockey. We got 36 coaches roughly now, and they all have played at extremely high levels of the game. We have six Olympic team member women coaches. We have four NWHL women's coaches and seven ex-NHL guys. And the rest of the resume players are all played in the AHL, high-level European. The girls, we have some Division I players now coaching. So the idea is to take this knowledge and experience and circulate it back in the game. Like I mentioned, when I saw the girls at the gym and I saw their passion, dedication, I wanted to find a way to help not only them personally. Rebecca Johnson is on our platform as a coach, but also the women's game. And what I saw was a pain point in some regard of like opportunities for women to stay in the game, give back to the game, but it's got to be financially beneficial for them. You know, not everything can be just donating your time and that stuff. Like that only goes so far when you're, you know, let's say you're a 25, 26, 27 year old woman. You can't donate your time. There needs to be a financial opportunity there. And a lot of what I saw from my view was these women, high level women, would circle back to you like where they went to college and stay on campus there, which is great. But the problem is that stays on that campus because there's all these rules with NCAA. You can't recruit, you can't talk to, or this kind of thing, right? What I want to do is take these women, these high level women and experts in the game, and start taking that resource and circle it into the game all over the world. So wherever girls have film, we can get that resource of a Rebecca Johnson, Amanda Palke, Blake Bolden, go down the list, Jordan Brickner from the NWHL, and you start getting these players working with the youth and circling that knowledge back in, and then also making money doing it. I think it's really covers a lot of, checks a lot of boxes off, right? It's great for the game. It's great for the growth of the game. Young girls really enjoy having those kind of women mentor them and work on their game. It's exciting. I know for me, thinking about it, if I was 13, 14, 15 years old, and I had, let's just throw a name out there, like Mark Messier was going to cut up my film. Yeah. It would have made me so excited. You know,
I remember the last time I saw Mark Messier was in, he was playing in Vancouver there. He signed that 3-year contract and he blew his knee out. I was at the Roxy, having a pee in a urinal right beside him. And, we ended up having quite the night that night.
Oh, that's funny.
Great leader as well. Just curious, like, I've watched a lot of your highlight reels and they're unbelievable. Was there any player in specific that you actually patterned your game off of?
Not really. I like to watch and I picked apart certain players or watch certain players and different players all around, you know, Sakic for shooting, Forsberg for how he handled the puck and kind of used his body for puck protection and a lot of reverse hits, stuff like that. Lindstrom, I played on the power play. So watching Lindstrom, how he walked the line and what he looked for and how he, you know, manipulated the play from the blue line. I used that information. I like to just pick and when I would see a play or a player doing some things that I really liked, I would just try to watch it as much as I could and then go. And back then we didn't have a tablet or an iPhone to carry around and rerun the video. It's literally watch it, remember it, and then go practice it. And then when I got a chance to watch it again, I'd see how I was getting, it was like kind of getting close to what I saw, you know what I mean? And using imagery.
Yeah, I do.
So that's, I think imagery work is so important in imagining it and perfecting it and then comparing it, so to speak. I think it's huge. And
well, I mean, we're actually, you know, we're visual and, you know, that's how we learn. We learn through vision. We learn through feelings. We learn through our emotions. And so, yeah, I think you're really like, this is going to be big, man. I mean, who are some of the players that are involved? I think Patrick Kane was one.
Yeah, I did some work with Patrick Kane, right? I sent him some clips and he was really impressed with the work and the stuff that I pulled apart for him. And just the tips I had for him, Corey Perry and Drew Doughty, I did some clips for these guys. Yeah. And this was in the time of my infancy stages and getting it, seeing what proven concept, so to speak. So I did some clips for some high end people and they were really, the feedback was very positive, which gave me that gave me a lot of hope and a lot of, positive energy towards, okay, we can go forward with this. Cause you don't just start building. It's good to have dreams, but at this age, it's a little bit different when you're 12, 13, have dreams and you're shooting at them. You got a long time to miss your shot. When you're older and you start doing business, money's involved and you want to make sure your dream is not a pipe dream. So, having these high end people really look at the stuff I was doing and have great opinions on it. It gave me a lot of, it gave me a lot of positive energy and proof of concept and all that stuff. And I started working with some other pro guys and the feedback's been really positive. So, it's not, I like to say it and I say it on the platform. This isn't theory, it's experience and knowledge that we're passing along. And these are from people that have stood in those positions. So it's not a fan in the stands when why doesn't he shoot on the power play? Like we're literally talking about where you and when and why you shoot on the power play and helping the players understand that. So it's from a different perspective.
Well, it says a lot about your character, obviously, to get some of these high end players, they obviously respect you. And the ever so humble Rob Schrempf. I mean, to have that many players at the, that have gone to the next level and had so much success and, you reaching out to them and having them out on your platform. I mean, that's just awesome. I mean, that's an accomplishment in its own right, right there.
Yeah, no, thanks. I appreciate it. There's good people to in the game of hockey approved a lot and they've done a lot for the game and in the game, to be, and the conversations with them and bouncing hockey talk off them and having them being able to grab pieces for me was definitely gratifying. And yeah, for sure. If I'd be honest, it made me feel really good about it.
So who's your favorite roommate on the road and what was your go-to food on the road too? I know Wayne Gretzky used to eat, rumor has it that Wayne Gretzky used to eat 4 hot dogs before every game. So what was Rob Schrempf's go-to meal before a game and who was his favorite roommate on the road? Maybe you can tell those couple stories about that one.
Oh, road roomies. That's a good question.
Road roomies. We should do a whole segment on road roomies. Christ.
And Wade Brookbank. Wade Brookbank was my, he was my roommate my rookie year in the minors. He used to call me Pigpen.
Pigpen.
He'd get the room and I'd have my bag on like traveled in like 10 seconds. He'd be like, Shrimpy, he's like, we just got here, man. Like, look at it. What? He's like, a tornado went off. He's like, you are a pig pen. And then from the first time we roomed, he told me at the rest, hey, pig pen, ready for dinner?
That's good, man. I think that's, you know, what a lot of people don't understand is that, you know, behind the scenes, you know, behind the glitz and the glamour, you know, that we're all just human beings. And, you know, it's, you know, being away from home and family, being on the road. What are the you know, the NHL, the never home league, yeah. You know, it's, you know, and, you know, obviously, you know, it's a heavy schedule. I know you never played the full 80 games, but, you know, you played a lot of games in, you know, the AHL and other leagues as well. Yeah. I mean, it's, 82 games is a long haul. And I mean, even what's going on now, I mean, do you ever think it's going to get back to normal where we see some fans in the stands again?
Yeah, I don't, I think, you know, this, I'm not an expert by any means. None of us are really in this, what's going on, but, you know, see how it's reacting here. It's starting to, you know, there was actually some cases with the team here, the professional team, the KHL team. They had 5 guys come down with it. So, yeah, I mean, it's a weird time, but that might be a year before it's back to what we call normal.
Yeah, whatever normal is, right? Whatever normal. Yeah, I know. I had a quick chat with Glenn yesterday, and he lives in Tampa, and he said that Tampa's just going crazy right now. He said they're it's just on fire, but they took a big hit last night. So who was your prediction, Tampa or Dallas? And Dallas is stacked. They got a hell of a team.
Yeah, you know what? I it's tough to say, but we go with the emotion and the friendship side of it. Obviously, Corey Perry being in Dallas would pull for them. Who knows? It's going to be a tough series, I think, because Tampa has had that heartbreak. They had that President Trophy season, and they lost first round to Columbus, so they've had that. We'll see how it goes, but Dallas, they are stacked with experience.
Yeah,
you know,
huge depth on that team.
Depth, Pavelski, you got Perry, you got the young studs with a good mixture. You got Radulov, who's, you know, experienced vet. I mean, Radulov's been sneaky for a while, and he also had some great experience in playoffs in the KHL. So, I mean, he left for a little while, but he went over to the KHL and it did really well. So he's
got. And you guys played against each other both in the NHL and the KHL, correct?
I never played against. No, Radulov was in the show. He was over, you know, I did play against him. I think he was in Moscow. Yeah, like he was in Moscow when I was here. It was lockout season when I was here. So,
yeah, he's got a little bit of skill.
Yeah, I know. He's a big boy. He's bigger than you think.
What is he, about 220?
Yeah, he's a big dude. He's like 6'2", 6'3". Yeah. It's kind of deceiving how big he is, actually. He looks kind of tall and skinny on the ice, but he's a big dude, and he's very skilled.
Yeah, a big dangler.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, one more question, then we'll wrap it up here. So if you have any message to the people of the world in these times, what would it be?
I guess I would attempt as an emotion or if there's something I would attach my trailer to, my hitch, my wagon to, so to speak, it'd be positivity and creativity. In these trying times, I think it's easy to get latched onto negativity and doom and gloom. I think, you know, it's very tough what's going on in the world. I do understand. I don't come from a silver spoon. My family's, you know, hardworking factory working dad. My mom works 2 jobs, but I understand both sides. I got a chance to be a professional athlete. I got it. I got it all the way through. But in these times, you know, some of these scenarios you think about, you know, the people losing their job, it's terrible. Some of these things could be a chance to start something new. If you can have to step back and be positive and creative. How many people lost their job that also like hated that freaking job? You know, there's opportunity to be creative in this time. And that's maybe not for every single person. I think you can attach positivity and creativity to everybody. You know, some people have circumstances where there isn't opportunity, and that is tough. And hopefully they can find a way. But if you start with positivity, I think that's your first step.
Absolutely.
In any case, and try to figure that out.
I think a lot of it's, you know, reframing how we're looking at the world too, and what we've done to each other. You know, it's, you know, driven on economics and commodities and products and all this kind of stuff. I think it's, you know, this is a chance where people are really showing their true colors. You know, it's, you know, a lot of people are pressing the panic button, which is obviously, you know, when your career, your life gets put on hold for who knows how long, you know, that obviously drives fear into the masses, and that vibration can be felt, you know, all the way across the universe, so to speak. You know, I don't mean to get all spiritual on your ass, but you know, you're over there and you're saying that things are not so bad. You know, I'm in the Okanagan right now, and you know, long lineups and lots of masks for sale. I know Hanes just came out with their own brand, so I don't know. I think it just is what it is. But I think on the other side of this, you know, even though unfortunately we are losing a lot of people to addiction and mental health issues through this, not just the actual virus, which I'm not fully convinced that it's nothing more than a flu or some sort of virus that, you know, there's all kinds of conspiracy theories that I'm not going to get into. And I don't think that's the point of this conversation. But yeah, I think on the other side of it could be a whole new world of opportunities and awesomeness.
Yeah, I think this transition was coming for a long time. It just took a weird virus to come. But it, I mean, AI has been coming for a long time. We've been paying attention.
Yeah. And,
tech is huge, and there's opportunity, and it's not to, and there's also opportunity, you know, Ryan, in the normal fields of I have buddies that own construction companies and plumbing companies, and you know, they're saying they're having a tough time filling jobs. So there's places, you know, to pick up. If you get creative and think outside the box and with a positive attitude, you know, there's some good paying jobs actually, you know, those aren't Harvard law degree qualifications. So there's opportunity, I think, on both sides, whether you want to take it to a big, you know, tech company or remote hockey platform. Who would have thought, you know, for me, this isn't what I drew up in my picture, but it changed my, you know, be flexible, stay with positive attitude. And we launched this company, 44 Vision Hockey, in the middle of a pandemic. There was no hockey, but I had you know, I saw the picture and I really thought this could have an impact, and I believed in it. And those testimonies gave me a lot of positive energy towards it. And here we are.
That's what I love about you, Rob. I love about it's, you know, that power of belief. You know, you got to believe it in order to receive it. And, you know, I try to live by that motto, even though it's not always uncomfortable, but, you know, it is what it is. We're human beings. Sometimes you got to get busy being uncomfortable to feel comfortable with what you're doing, you know, and that goes back to the goals whole thing. You know, if your goal ain't big enough, then you better maybe reconfigurate what you're thinking about as far as goals, and, you know, and feel good about it at the same time and keep pursuing it and just have that never give up attitude. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Be flexible.
Yeah. Be flexible. I'm going to have to go join a yoga class later this afternoon. I'll let you know how that goes. So I'm going to do the downward dog and spandex.
All right.
Yeah. You want to join me on that and hold me accountable?
Yeah. I just, Dave, send me the video. I'll break it down. Okay.
we'll see what happens. It might be a double post repost on Instagram.
Yeah, right.
What do you think of this whole social media web anyways? I know it's, you know, it's a great platform to meet good people. You know, there's so much emphasis these days put on followers and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I don't give a fuck how many followers you have or whatever. I think it's just about, you know, sending that positive message out to people. And, you know, being judged on, oh, well, this guy's got 200,000 followers. He must be a better guy. Or, you know, I have to emulate this person because he's got this many, you know, followers or whatever. I mean, I think it's all about coming together and just, doesn't matter how many followers you got. It's about, you know, the message. And, plus I think a lot of those followers are fake too.
I think people buy the followers. People can buy followers. So,
yeah.
unfortunately, that's the world we live in. I don't get caught up in that. I could honestly care less. And even with the platform on that side of it, I've not once thought about followers. It's more about giving genuine information and having a solid product and believing in the product. I don't care what we have for number. I don't have a goal for numbers as far as followers, because we're not in the business of creating content. We're in the business of passing on knowledge and experience. So it's a much different world. I'm not doing things for double taps. Things for gratification and also for, you know, helping players gain in that aspect. So that's our real metric of how we're doing. Not, hey, we got 20,000 followers on it, whatever. That doesn't even come into conversation. So it's really about being genuine comfortable in your own lane. I think that's a tough world to live in too, when you start worrying about getting double taps and always that's a lot of pressure on yourself as a person to be constantly doing things for other people to approve of it. It's tough. I mean, you're going to run out of stuff eventually. I don't know. Cause what, you can only take it so far, you know. It's just how it is. And that's why I don't want to get caught up in that game. That's what I've mentioned to the people on the platform. We're not in with us. We all have our resume. We all have our experience and our knowledge that literally lies within inside of us. We don't have to do anything. I mean, we don't have to create anything as far as things for attention or for double taps. It's literally lies within inside of us. And it's just about passing that on. So it's a whole different ballgame. And eventually what will happen is we might get X amount of followers. Cool. They're all going to get value add by following, because the stuff that's coming out is not for attention. It's for benefiting or
absolutely. And the right people always come your way anyways. You know, you put it out there and you got something good. The right people always follow into your life for a specific purpose.
Yeah.
I really believe that. So, you just got to keep going with what you believe in. And it's something that obviously you've been doing your whole life and had, you know, great success. And that's why I love talking to you, Rob. So I just want to thank you so much for your time. And number one is being the first guest on All Over the Map. And greatly appreciated, my friend.
No problem. I appreciate your time. Appreciate you having me on, buddy. And we'll stay in touch. We talk a lot. So I look forward to getting this out and also watching your success and helping build that and be a support beam for you. So good luck with the rest of the pods, and always here for you, buddy.
Thanks, buddy. I'm always here for you too. Bye, Ben.
Ciao, bud.